Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County.
This is episode 10, That New City Smell.
Hi everyone, welcome to this episode of Color Country Politics. I am Jesse Harris.
Jenny Hendricks.
And we have our special guest today, Cedar Highlands Mayor Steve Swan. Steve, thanks for coming.
Thank you for inviting me.
So I have a lot of people ask questions about Cedar Highlands because they'll be driving down the road. They're like, what are those houses up there on the hill? And so why don't you tell us about Cedar Highlands? What would be your elevator pitch to someone of why should they want to live there?
Oh, Cedar Highlands. Well, it basically started in about 1981, 1982 as a bunch of cabins, you know, a little bit of a development, rural development, a bunch of cabins. And personally, it's one of the most beautiful spots, I think, in southern Utah. You know, where can you be this close to a significant sized city and all the amenities that a city has? And, you know, 2 miles up the road, you're sitting in a pristine forest and, you know, deer's running through and the antelope are playing and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, and a view to die for. I think it really is one of the most wonderful places that I've ever lived. It has gone through a lot of kind of quirky twists and turns in its, you know, long road from, you know, being a bunch of cabins that people just kind of built on the side of a hill to becoming a small town. And my view of Cedar Highlands is that it's going to be one of the most beautiful places. You know, a few years from now, it will be the 100% spot where people want to live.
How many people are living up there now?
Well, if you count all, we have 80 total homes. About 40 of them are full-time and 40 of them are part-time. Roughly between the 80 homes, there's somewhere around 200 to 300 people. A little over 100 are permanent residents.
Okay. So I know the decision was made to incorporate Cedar Highlands back in 2016. Walk us through why that decision was made, because a lot of people don't understand it.
You know, as with everything in life, it comes down to money. There's been a lot of controversy as to whether or not Cedar Highlands, you know, should be a permanent resident place. It was originally designated seasonal living and a few cabins in the woods, and that's all it was supposed to be. You know, and that argument has kind of gone out the window because now there's permanent people living up there, and it's a beautiful place to live, and that's where people want to live. And we have some, you know, really significant homes up there now. And we have an infrastructure, and we're not quite 80% or 50% built out with the 80 homes that we have. So we still have a lot of growth. And now as a city, there's, you know, still some private land at the top. So the town can grow significantly, and it's a beautiful place to be able to grow. But there's a cost for a town. There's a cost for any community. And sometimes people like to do things on the cheap, and they like to, you know, kind of put up the cheapest cabin they can with the cheapest sewer and just, you know, have a place in the woods. And, you know, I can't fault people on that. But then there comes a reality that at some point, in order to prudently run a community with all of the infrastructure and the services that are truly required, there's a cost. And that cost has to be taken care of somehow. And originally, the neighborhood and the subdivision was started with an HOA. And there was some HOA funds, and, you know, things were kind of, you know, rambling along and working fairly well. But the problem is when you take a long-term perspective at a community and what it takes to actually run a community, sometimes there are a lot of shortcuts that are made, and those shortcuts, there's a bill due somewhere in the future.
And so you were part of the county, just with an HOA, and now you're incorporated. So now Cedar Highlands, the town, is responsible for what?
So Cedar Highlands, the town, now is responsible for the infrastructure. And for, you know, all of the basic services and levels of service that a city or a municipality has to have. As an HOA, it was difficult to be able to do that, not only from a legal standpoint, but also from an economic standpoint. Plus the fact that when you are just an HOA and your funding is going to the county, I mean, you're still paying a municipal service just as if you were a town, but that money is going to the county. And the county has a much bigger, issue with where they spend money, and they can spend it, you know, in a lot of places, but where you are. And over the years, that pretty much was a lot of the situation, is that Cedar Highlands was paying a lot of taxes, but there wasn't a lot of funding and service level coming back. Not to say that the county wasn't doing anything, but a town with its own tax structure has advantages, and it means that you have a little bit more self-determination as to what happens to that money, where it's spent. So now 100% of our municipal services fees come back to us, versus in the past we had no idea really what percentage of those funds were actually coming back, but I guarantee you it was something south of 100%.
Easily. So the services that the city's providing, you mentioned infrastructure, you're going to be working on roads, water, sewer, I'm guessing snow removal services. With it being a residential community, is that presenting quite a challenge in finding the funds needed to do all of these things?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we certainly have more funds at our disposal now than the HOA had. But that doesn't mean that we have enough to do everything we'd like to do. I mean, the basic premise of a community, and particularly a governmental entity, whether it's a municipality or county or whatever, is what level of service, you know, can you afford, and what level of service do you need? And somewhere in between those two numbers is where you're going to end up. Now, hopefully, the two numbers are very close together, but that's the challenge for government. You know, you certainly don't want to go over that number, but you certainly don't want to go way under it either. You've got to figure out what level of service you should provide, and then, you know, try and educate people to say this is the level of funding we need to provide that service.
I understand that as an incorporated municipality, there are different sorts of grants or maybe low interest loans that are available to you that would not have been available just as part of the county.
Yeah, there's the CIB grants, you know, at state levels. There's small grants. I mean, we did a FireWise program this last May. It was a very small grant, but again, you know, free money is great because it helps us to take care of our fire situation at whatever level we can work with. And we were able to take a $500 grant and with sponsorships, you know, turn it into $2,500. And that, you know, gave us some significant capabilities in reducing our fire fuels. So, you know, every little step helps. Now, there are larger grants for right-of-ways, you know, grants for different funding, grants for emergency service equipment, etc. So, I mean, there are a number of grants that become available. But, you know, there a lot of people turn to grants and think, you know, well, it's free money. But, you know, no, it's not really free, and it's very hard to get. But it is out there, and it can be used in conjunction with your own municipal funds and with loans. To, you know, especially when you need to do large infrastructure projects such as roads and utilities and other things.
So why was the decision made to incorporate separately rather than petition for annexation?
Self-determination is probably the biggest answer. We have a unique environment on the mountain, and most people up there want to see it protected. And the development, especially at the lower ends, you know, where you see Cedar City kind of coming up the side of the mountain and some of the things that could be done there. And what kind of development, you know. So it really comes down to a community that wants to say, hey, you know, we want to determine, you know, whether or not this is all low-income housing, or this is homes, or this is cabins, or, you know, this is a Kmart or a strip center or whatever. And I firmly believe that, you know, the people closest to where they live are the ones that should have the priority to determine what gets built there, mm-hmm. and how it gets built there, and when it gets built there.
That's probably a fair point. I can't think of an area of Cedar City that has the same kind of low density, spread out preservation model that's you see up there in Cedar Highlands and further up on Kolob Terrace.
Yeah, and you know, personally, I believe in the model that it's basically kind of a village model where you concentrate your housing, but you do it in such a way that it's aesthetically pleasing and it fits into the natural way of how the mountain is formed and the trees and the forest and everything there. And even though a large portion of it is BLM right now, at some point that's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, whether you look at Park City or Salt Lake City or any of those other areas, you've seen how large sections of the bench have, you know, been developed or overdeveloped. And I think we need to be cognizant of that, and we need to be careful of that. I mean, there's a lot of issues, not just the aesthetic issues of putting a home up there and having a nice view, mm-hmm. but you've got watershed issues, you've got, you know, the animal breeding ground issues. You've got a lot of things you've got to be cognizant of.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I understand that there's a little bit of controversy surrounding the formation of the city and transfer of money from the HOA. Can you explain what happened there? Because that's something a lot of people ask questions about, and I have to shrug and say, I have no idea.
Yeah, that's a fun one. And again, it's like, what's the best use of the funds? If you look at it on an aggregate, that we've got a certain number of people up there and a certain amount of funds that we have to work with, and what's the best way to use those funds? So, for example, the HOA has been, for many years, been, you know, collecting thousands of dollars and using them on the roads. And some years they used them properly and some years they didn't. Part of the problem with an HOA is you don't have the structure that's imposed upon you as a municipality in how you use the funds. Mm-hmm. And so, and a lot of attorneys I've talked to, you know, they kind of shake their head when you mention the word HOA because, you know, it's kind of amateur hour at the government office.
That's a great way to describe it.
Yeah. And you know, and sometimes you'll have HOAs that are run very well, and sometimes it's just the Nazi party gone wild.
Mm-hmm.
And so utilizing those funds in the HOA, you know, the HOA is paying for insurance and the HOA is paying for legal fees and all these other things. And so is the town. And what we're trying to say is, look, let's simplify the duplicity. The municipality has the advantage of using the funds and using more funds and using them better. And they're much more restrictive. You know, we get audited by the state. The county auditors work with us. And they're constantly looking. We have to do a quarterly transparency report. We have a certain way that funds have to flow, which we've had to set up this year. I mean, it's starting a town from scratch,
yeah.
is an experience that, you know, I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy.
I can imagine.
But I do appreciate the structure to it, because it's not loosey-goosey. There are certain things you have to do in a certain way,
mm-hmm.
and the funds are much, much better managed versus an HOA. And I think that in and of itself, but the overriding thing is that, you know, how do we consolidate all the funds that we have? We shouldn't be paying twice for accounting and legal and all these other things. Mm-hmm. And basically, a lot of people look at an HOA as if it is a government entity, and it's not. It really has very little standing, mm-hmm. to do anything of significance, other than have a great party once in a while and tell you that, you know, your dog's doing something it shouldn't be doing at the wrong time, etc. Whereas with a municipality, we really have the opportunity to use the funds to help a community and do what needs to be done. Our roads and our fire are our two biggest issues, road, mm-hmm. safety and fire. And they're interconnected because, you know, one facilitates the other.
Yeah. If you don't have good roads, if a fire breaks out, no one's going to get up there to put it out.
Exactly. And, you know, making sure that we've got the water situation and all our other infrastructure properly done.
Speaking of roads, I understand from talking to residents up there that the road situation, the access roads into Cedar Highlands, was sort of part of the thought process in incorporating. What's happening with your access roads to get up to your community?
Well, what we've worked with over the last several years, we've worked with BLM to try and change the right-of-way. And it becomes really complex, and this mm-hmm. is the tough part about government, mm-hmm. is that there's no simple answer.
Yeah.
First of all, we have to work with the BLM area because we've got a right-of-way access that we had to reroute. We had to work with engineers. We started with Go Civil and worked out some rerouting mm-hmm. because we have a couple of grades and a couple of turn areas which are non-standard, and it's difficult for fire engines and other mm-hmm. things to be able to get up the road, to make the turn, etc.
So the road that you're talking about is the one that comes from Greens Lake up the
yeah,
base?
Yeah, the front road. The front road.
Okay.
So the front road is our priority, and there's a couple of areas on the front road. In fact, I was in a meeting just today with one of the regional councils here. We're looking to get funding to be able to start moving forward. A lot of people all hit me, why are you moving so fast on all these things? And it's like, you know, it takes years to do
yeah.
this, and if you don't start quickly, you know, it's just that much further down the road.
Right.
It's not that we can do this in 6 months or even sometimes 2 or 3 years. So we have to start, and step by step. The first step was getting BLM to help us with the right-of-ways. But it's a very iterative process because you look at it and say, okay, can we engineer this? Well, if we re-engineer this, well, what will it cost us once we've re-engineered it? Well, okay, that route is too expensive, so let's look at another route. And then each time you have to walk back and say, well, we need to change this right-of-way because this route's too expensive or it's too hard to do. And so that's kind of the process we go through, and that takes months and years mm-hmm. to go through, and that's what we're doing right now. We've got another section of road that we think is going to be more functional for us and be able to get rid of our biggest headache, which is a grade, it's about, we call it the 17%, but it's actually about 18 or 19,
oh,
closer
man.
To 20 in a
wow.
few places. And that's a steep grade.
Yeah.
I mean, even for cars, you know, I go up and down every day, and I've got, you know, four-wheel drive and a good vehicle and pretty good tires, but there are times where it's a little tricky.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a lot of visitors up there.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've had people come up in Cadillacs with two-wheel drive and
oh,
no
dear.
Snow tires.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, dear.
But, you know, and then they go off the side of the road, then they block the road, and then somebody panics trying to pass them, and they block the road. And
yeah.
I mean, we literally had last February, March time frame, which is our most dangerous period mm-hmm. when we get a lot of ice,
mm-hmm.
and it only takes, you know, half
yeah.
an inch in ice. And, you know, I come out, and there's five cars scattered all over the place because
oh,
they all skidded one way or the other. We've tried to improve that, and we managed to improve almost 3,000 feet of road this last year. And what we're trying to do is widen the road, because
mm-hmm.
in some sections we had a section, two or three sections of road that were like 17 feet wide.
Wow.
And on one side there was a 30, 40, 50
right.
foot drop off.
Yeah.
You know, have you ever been on an ice road like that?
Yeah.
It's pretty spooky.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a lot of people up there that are coming down, and that's the last thing they want to run into.
Mm-hmm.
So we've widened some of the dangerous sections. We've put some more rock down. We've smoothed it out. It's not enough yet,
mm-hmm.
but we have to do whatever we can as fast as we can, when we can, because that section of road creates a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like as an HOA, you wouldn't have any power or authority to do any of these things about the access road.
Yeah, not really. I mean, you know, we could, as an HOA, and I used to be president of the HOA, you know, we could throw some rock down and cover it, etc. But it was a little bit more difficult to go, you know, much beyond doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Now with the town, we can do a little bit more structure and a little bit more engineering. But it's still going to be a long road to, no pun intended.
A long road to get your road?
To get to our get our road fixed. But it's important. Because
yeah.
it's part not only of the access for emergency vehicles, but a way that we can actually utilize the road for some fire abatement
mm-hmm.
and fire protection
mm-hmm.
as well.
Yeah. So if you were going to give advice to any area considering incorporation, what would you give them? So I've heard rumors that Mid-Valley Estates wants to incorporate instead of be part of Enoch, and you never know if some other areas are going to incorporate as we grow.
Every community has the right for self-determination. And I think you have to, the first thing you've got to look at is why are we really doing this? And unless it involves a really critical issue, safety, your long-term economic viability, you know, those deep issues, not something superfluous like, you know, we want a park here or something like that. But it has to really involve some deep critical issues before I think you should move forward with it. But again, it's up to the residents. It is a complex process. It does involve a lot of structure, and that's good and bad. But you have to realize that it's not going to be an easy road, and so the reason you're doing it better be a good one.
Absolutely. You don't want to start a mission without a mission statement and a purpose. A
clear path.
Yeah, and one that really impacts people's lives significantly and is not just, you know, fun to do or, you know, it's a nice idea.
I can think of a lot of fun to do things.
Yeah.
Was there any parting thought you'd like to leave everyone with?
I think people in general need to understand the politics of where they live much better. That there are so many rumors and so many misconceptions mm-hmm. about how our cities and our governments work. And, you know, thankfully, we have a lot of good people doing a lot of good things, serving, you know, for many and with little notoriety. But it's amazing how fragile our communities mm-hmm. really are without these people. You know, we just expect the water to run and the lights
right.
to turn on
yeah.
and everything to just happen because that's the way it's always happened since we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, since moving into this position and seeing a lot of what's happening behind the scenes, you know, it's a miracle we have all of these things that work. And so people, I think, need to have a greater appreciation of just how complex of a system we have and how amazing it is we've got people to actually step up and make it work.
Well said.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, Steve, thank you so much for sitting down with us today.
I appreciate your time.
I learned things, and I'm hoping everyone listening is learning things too, and hopefully we'll have a better idea of what's involved with incorporation and why you move forward.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.